Hi, welcome back to Women Making Moves, where we celebrate the moves that women are making. My name is Amy Pons, founder of Unlock the Magic, Coaching, Healing, and Magic School. I'm joined today with Brianna Grayson. Brianna is a writer who speaks openly about living with bipolar disorder and the complexities that come with it: relationships, work, creativity, stigma, and growth. Her writing blends personal experience with cultural reflection, offering a grounded look at what stability really requires. She believes in telling the truth plainly and creating space for others to feel seen in their own experiences. Brianna, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, what stability actually requires. As an energy coach, I work a lot within the root chakra. And if you're not familiar with where that is, it's the base of your spine. And it's the chakra energy center that is all about safety, security, and stability, which for most of us, I mean, if not all of us over the pandemic, we all got unplugged there. And it was intentional. We were meant to be unplugged so that we could create the new existence. Tell me about what that line means for you. When I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, so with bipolar, I mean, I don't have the luxury to live as, I guess, someone who does not have this illness, so that it does take work. I will be honest and say the first thing that it took me a while to get to this point, but for bipolar, since it is a chemical imbalance in the brain, for me personally, medicine is a big part of my regimen and how I remain, strive for stability. That's one thing, but it's not an end be all. You have to do other things. You can't just take medicine. So I just wanted to first set that straight. I am medicated. Other than that, though, I have to go to therapy, make sure that I'm keeping up with my psychiatrist visits. I have to go to bed early, get the same amount of, or get the correct amount of sleep, working out. I have to try to eat the right way. It's just a lot of work to remain stable, but it's really worth it. So I just wanted to put that out there that it is work, but it's not impossible. It's very doable and it's worth it to put that work in.
What does stable mean?
Right, like, because that would mean something that there is a normal and there really isn't a normal.
Right, there's no normal. And I actually celebrate that there's no normal, because quote unquote normal to me means a copy paste from systems that never included all humanity. So it's like, meh.
Right. Yeah. They tell you normal is one thing, but that doesn't fit a lot of people at all. So, you know, it's this arbitrary definition of normal.
Yeah. But I get from your perspective, like stable, you feel like, what does that mean for you as it relates to bipolar? Like you feel not, you feel good, or like, what is that?
So it means that I'm like kind of going through life smoothly. I say smoothly very loosely, because everybody has problems, or every day is not a happy day just because, you know, you don't have a mental illness. But stability means, you know, I'm not ruining my relationships. I'm not getting in trouble at work. I'm, you know, getting out of bed. I'm doing the things I need to do, or I'm not on the other end of that. I'm not doing things that I shouldn't be doing. So when I say stable, that's what I mean.
It's like helping your body and your entire inward and outward be set up for success. And that includes everything that you said earlier, the meds, the workout, the food. It's all of it together combined.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's not all, it doesn't always feel like work, because there's creative aspect of it. You know, I like to play my guitar and that's fun. I like to write just for personal reasons. And even like moving my body, for example, it's funny that even right after this show, I'm going to go to yoga. It's like therapy-based kind of yoga. So I don't want to say work and mean like, oh my gosh, I don't want to go to work today. Not that kind of work. There are things that you can enjoy that also will alleviate some symptoms.
Yeah, I love that about yoga. I go to a gentle and restorative yoga, and it is very spiritual, very energetic. It's just beautiful. And it's really like when I tune in. So I haven't gone for a while. You're helping me remember that. I will do that. Brianna, what are some of the things that people still hear bipolar and like immediately go to as it relates to stigma or things that been like misperceived?
I think when people hear bipolar, they aren't as forgiving with bipolar as they are maybe with some of the other mental illnesses. I think it's one of the scary ones. I'm using quotes, scary ones. So people just don't know a lot about it. I think they have this idea of like somebody like who needs to go to a psych ward or something like that, or just erratic all over the place, can't converse with people. I think that is still highly stigmatized. And I think it's just because people don't really know or understand. I don't think they come from a bad place all of the time, but it's just misunderstandings and misconceptions.
Do you think that bipolar is one of the most stigmatized mental health?
I think schizophrenia and bipolar, I would say yes, because those are the two where your brain is chemically altered. And a lot of people don't know. They just think it's the scary thing. And yeah, a lot of it just comes from just the lack of knowledge, I think.
So, Brianna is a woman, and I'm in my almost mid-40s, and I'm approaching perimenopause. There's a lot of things going on in my energy field around mental health in general and just understanding what my different hormones and things are doing. Do we know how bipolar and let's say something like perimenopause or any sort of like our cycles play together or influence each other, I guess?
I think that bipolar definitely exacerbates the symptoms, or the other way around. That is a factor too. So I haven't reached that stage yet. Well, not the perimenopause, but of course I do menstruate. So around that time, I do have to sit and pause and think like, oh my gosh, I'm really hormonal. What's going on? Is it because I'm on my cycle, or is it because, close to going through an episode? Because, we only have about 1 week out of the month to like feel normal. So.
Bingo, bingo. I was gonna say, I'm like, I'm in my luteal phase right now. And so I'm just like days away from starting my period. So I'm spicy. I have no filters. I don't feel very good. And I'm just kind of grumpy. But you're saying that it's being very mindful about where you are in your cycle, as it relates to anything that you're feeling.
Yeah, it that's a part of it too. So I don't know if you're into astrology or not, but I actually track my cycle. I built this workflow where it'll let me know exactly where the moon is. So then I'll document like, hey, the moon is here. Here it is in my chart. What happened this day? What am I feeling? So that I can have some data to look back on to know like, hey, well, when the moon is in Pisces, I feel like this. Or when the moon is in the ninth house, or in my ninth house, I feel that way. So I use all of these things to like help me out, like be the best I can, because I do have, this ailment. So, I mean, I think I would do those things anyway if it weren't for the bipolar, because I enjoy it. But I think about these things in tandem, like, what's me? What's me being a woman, and what's me having bipolar?
I love that you said that because, we're getting into my wheelhouse here. Everything is energy. Energy is everything. And I feel, getting to your point, like you don't have to follow astrology so closely to understand that, loosely, sun is masculine energy, moon is feminine energy, and like we are the moon and moon is us. And beautifully, before the Gregorian calendar, like the 12-month calendar was put in place, it was actually the 13 even months. And it was actually in accordance with its 28 days, which was our cycle. And of course that had to be disrupted, right? So, to cause chaos and have us question our own sanity, right? So of course that happened, but you're spot on. I always share with people, even after menopause, even after we stop bleeding, even if we remove the organs, we still have that cycle. So always look to the moon because that's your natural rhythm. And we can, but it's hard when the world doesn't respond to the way that I wanna live.
Right.
Amazing. So, Brianna, what moves are you excited to be making as you enter the actual 26?
Oh, so I'm just excited to be telling my story at a broader level. So I'm happy that you invited me here to do that. And I also plan on to continue to tell my story so that people can see themselves in me and to know that they're not alone and you can live a full life. So that's what, just to continue writing and continue telling my story and continue connecting with people.
Now, how old were you when you realized that maybe something was out of the ordinary for you? And what did that process look like?
So I was 25. It got to a point where the year prior, I had just like it got out of a relationship suddenly. And then like I was falling out with my friends, and then my closest friend, who's also my cousin, like we got into a fight. And after that, I'm like, okay, I'm the problem. So then I went to go get help, and from there, that's when they told me that I have bipolar. I think they talked to my mom as well, so she's played a part in, I think, my diagnosis, because growing up, I did have kind of temperamental as a child. So I would just kind of switch back and forth really quick, really irritable sometimes. So I have heard, that something could be wrong with me, but it wasn't until, I kind of destroyed everything around me when I knew, like, okay, let me go help myself out here. So that was when I was 25. I'm 35 now.
I actually, when you said that, I'm like, ooh, like a phoenix. Because sometimes you release what no longer serves you, but I get what you're, this is different, what you're talking about. How is it tested or how is it diagnosed?
So at first, I reached out to a therapist because I was having trouble with work. So for me, that's before and after the relationships, work is actually my biggest point of contention. So it was to a point where I wasn't like being able to work. I was calling out a lot. I was getting in trouble at work. I just couldn't take it. So I reached out to a therapist, and he couldn't get me in right away. He let me know that I can come in within a couple of weeks, but in the meantime, he gave me information about an intensive outpatient program. And so I went there and met up with a psychiatrist there, and they kind of asked me some questions and asked me about my symptoms. I think they might have talked to the therapist who set me up there too, and they also talked to my mom. So that was like the screenings that they did, and kind of asked me growing up, how I was and what got me to that point. So that was how they screened and told me that I have bipolar disorder. Oh, let me go back. Before I reached out to my therapist, I reached out to my PCP, my primary care provider doctor, and told him what was going on, and he prescribed me antidepressants. So I haven't started them yet. I was nervous to start them, but then when I got to the IOP program with the psychiatrist, when he found out that he gave me the antidepressants, he freaked out, like, oh no, you can't take those because, if you have bipolar, it can trigger a manic episode. So he was freaking out about that. But yeah, I just reached out to professionals to see, and that's when they let me know.
Is there something through childhood that could have been picked up on? I mean, 25, that's very young still, but at the same time, you went through several years of not knowing. Is there something through childhood that there could be observed or something as it relates to bipolar in children that people didn't know about, starting to learn about?
Well, besides the extreme irritability, sometimes I think, well, looking back, I know like depression showed up. Like, for example, I was a straight A student, barely got even a B. Then all of a sudden, I wouldn't do well in the class, and I just like sleep and not like get out the bed. I mean, it kind of just goes on, it went unnoticed. Spanish was my favorite. Like, English and Spanish were my favorites. A Spanish teacher, we had to label like the countries or something, and I didn't do it. Like, I think I got like two right, which is really unusual for me. And so she pulled me to the side and was like, hey, what's going on? And she didn't really get that deep, but she just let me retake the test because she's like, I know you know how to do this. So she just let me retake it. If it had more teachers like that, I wouldn't have gotten too far off the track. I got back on track way later, but yeah, a lot of things went unnoticed. But like, now looking back, I can see, like, okay, something was not right there.
Wow, bless that teacher. And you bring up such an important point. Oof. Today, whether it be school, we've gotten again as a larger system, whether it be healthcare, education, it feels like we've gotten more into this copy paste approach with everybody rather than really attuning to the individual as much as possible, especially at a young age. Because imagine, oh my gosh, imagine you just needed different support. And the days of us just going in and saying, okay, everybody is the same. Everybody needs the exact same. Everybody, no, we got to take a step back because the magic, the brilliance is in finally attuning to the individual. And imagine had you gotten that support the entire time. And I'm not suggesting that there's, I don't know, blame, but it's like, imagine if there were more adults that were finally attuned to themselves, they would be better at attuning to others as well.
Yes, I agree.
Shout out to that teacher. Do you ever talk to her?
I haven't talked to her probably since high school, I don't think.
You know what? I just actually wrote a thank you card to my sixth grade teacher that I haven't talked to, I mean, I don't know, 30 years or something. And we're now in contact with each other. And she was the very first woman in my life to actually see my soul and understand me. And that
Okay.
took until sixth grade, you know.
Yeah.
So.
It's beautiful. I love that.
So now she and I have each other's phone numbers and we text, and it's cute. It's just kind of wild. So, you know, you brought up such a great point about the workplace. And I want to go to a post that you made recently on LinkedIn, and I want to talk a little bit more about this. Remote and flexible schedules aren't a favor for disabled people. They protect the bottom line. For me, living with bipolar disorder means therapy every 2 weeks or more when needed, and regular psychiatric care. When I need to see my psychiatrist or therapist, remote work means I'm out for 2 hours instead of four or more. A flexible schedule means I can make up those 2 hours later instead of using my PTO. I can also schedule my appointments during regular business hours when providers are mostly available. So, Brianna, in this time when everyone, let me not say everyone, a lot of workplaces, a lot of people in charge are just wanting to kind of get back to quote unquote normal, as we said isn't a thing earlier in this show. But when folks are trying to get back to a normal and they are mandating these return to works, what's that doing for not just people with bipolar, but just any mental health?
You're leaving a lot of productivity on the table, I think. It affects the bottom line if people are in an environment that supports them and not the normal person, quote unquote, then they can thrive and that's better for the business. Like the whole bottom line is, I get, for the businesses to make money, you need workers to do that. If you're not giving people the tools that they need, then you're not going to get the results that you want. So you're leaving a lot of people out when you're mandating everyone to go back to the office.
And what does that do to someone with bipolar, this that they have to go back to the office? What does that create for them?
Well, in my experience, that when before I was remote, for me it was attendance issues galore. Or if I was physically there, then I would not be there mentally. Like I it could be like I'm not concentrating or just not able to focus. So for me, like it was the attendance for sure.
Well, and then unfortunately, because people aren't very well versed necessarily in mental health, let's say bipolar specifically, they're going to say that's a performance issue. And that's not true.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It is a performance issue. So if I'm given the ability, to have a more flexible or remote schedule, I don't have to call out as much.
I've seen it, people with mental health, and including myself, like I've gone through bouts of depression. Instead of seeing the person or helping and saying, like, are you okay? It's like, oh, let's put you on an action plan because you're not performing well. That I feel that perpetuates more of the mental health because it's not actually, I don't feel it's a performance issue. It's that person needs a different kind of support.
Right. It's not a performance issue. It's just that they need support.
So, what does support for bipolar look like in a workplace?
In the workplace, I think you need to have more one-on-ones with people who have bipolar. Well, this is what works for me. Have one-on-ones with people because that way you can stay on track or anticipate any issues that might happen, so you can avoid that. The flexible schedule, meaning you have more times to take breaks in between. And for me, a big thing is when I can work, because to me, it doesn't make sense to like say like, well, you have to work between these hours and these hours only. So if I have my work done at say like 7 p.m., then you don't want that work anymore. Like, so that's important to me too. The ability to like take breaks when I need and to recharge or go to my appointments or the things that I do that help me be better at work while I'm at work. So don't have to run into many issues. So it's just being more proactive rather than reactive, and you get in trouble for work and then you're not there at all, so that's no productivity at all.
You know, whether it's bipolar or any other mental health, or just even someone's having a rough day, as a people leader, I used to always tell my team, I don't care when you do the work at all. I don't care what you get up to. I trust you. We're adults. Do what's best for you. I trust that it's going to get done. And that's not to say that there's not ever like high importance matters, sure, but it goes back to what does each individual need to be successful that day? And I think that's just not something, in my experience, that some of the older generations were used to asking. It was just like, you show up, you do your job, you go home. There was no conversation about it. It's just do it. Whereas I'm a millennial, elder millennial, and it feels like now younger generations are coming up and saying, no, this is what I need to be successful. Show me you can provide that and that'll work for you. It's just this change. And I love what you're saying. It's like, help us help you. If you want to keep your business in business, help us help you. Let's have a two-way conversation about what works for everybody, not just you. Not everybody wants to have that combo.
And it's funny because when I am at work, normally it's like I can do like twice as much as the normal standard when I'm there. So it's not like, it's not a lazy thing. It's not like a I don't care kind of thing. It's just that sometimes everybody doesn't fit into that circle. Sometimes people are squares.
I would say that everyone's a square, and the days of forcing someone into a circle are donezo. Just cut it out. Amazing. So, Brianna, what would you share with anyone of any generation out there? Like, can you imagine some of the older generations with bipolar in some of those workplaces that never got accommodations, or like even before accommodations was a thing, or I don't know whether ADA came into place. Some of those older generations, people just genuinely either couldn't say anything, or if they did, or if they acted differently, like they would be ousted. What would you share maybe for each generation?
So for the boomer generation, I know that's tough because they don't speak about these things. And honestly, before I get into that, it took me a while to even share my secret. Like, I didn't share my secret until 2 years ago, or not even 2 years ago. So that can be really hard. So I get that that's not easy to do, but it really does help people to help you and so that people can understand you better. So if you are a boomer, I would say like just it's okay to acknowledge that you might have some mental health issues or someone around you or someone that you love may have them. Because I know with the boomer generation, they don't necessarily even believe in mental health. So that is a huge barrier. So to let alone talk about it, first they have to learn about it, educate themselves about it more. And then see Gen X. Is that the latchkey generation? Same thing for Gen X. I don't think they talk about it as much either. They're just like, hey, get it done, get work done. This is what you have to do. Just do it. I'm thinking about my managers in my head and which generations they're in, by the way, like as I'm going through this.
Yeah.
And so for millennials, I know we are much more open to having the conversation around mental health. So for millennials, just listen to each other and learn from those who are brave enough to share their story. And again, for all the generations, I just say educate yourselves about it. Gen Z, they're even more vocal than millennials.
Yeah. I feel like millennials, like the best thing you can do for a millennial is to say, "Are you okay?" And just start the conversation. Gen Z's going to be like, "Here's what's up. Here's what's not good today." And like I love me some Gen Z.
So I don't have that much advice for Gen Z. They just took it by the reins and just they're off.
I like to think millennials cracked the door for them.
For sure. And they just busted right
They
open.
bust through. Oh, and I mean, and every generation has had their challenges. I'm sure when boomers were in their 20s and 30s, they probably thought that about the generations two ahead of them, whatever. Everyone has their own whatevers, each generation, but I feel it's simply being able to look across the generation lines and just simply say, "How are you? Are you okay? What do you need? What does support look like for you in the daily world, both in personal and professional?" And I think you nailed it. That's just not a conversation, especially in the workplace, that people are either willing to or ever have felt safe to have, because you just don't get that deep at work. But we kind of need to.
That's where it is a responsibility for everybody to foster that environment to where people are okay talking about these things because more likely than not, if you yourself doesn't have a mental illness, then someone you know or someone that's close to you probably has one and you don't know it because it's just not something, that a lot of people talk about. We're talking more about it now for sure.
Getting better, but I find that the crux is a lot of, and again, I won't pick on generations necessarily, but I have found, again, in my personal experience, that the more unsafe the people in charge or at the top The more unsafe they feel about having these conversations, the more everyone feels unsafe having the conversations. And so it's just opening that door and leading differently. Understanding that at this point in time, it does look very different to lead than it did even a year ago, even especially 4 years ago, 5 years ago. It just looks different. And the faster, more, not faster, the more that leaders can be aware of that and lean into it for themselves and say, well, nothing feels the same. Nothing feels good. Nothing. The more they can do that, the more that they'll have space for all types of people within the workspace, specifically in general. As we start to wind down, and you mentioned, I know we talked about Gen Z. It's like, oh, really don't have a lot of advice for Gen Z because they come out swinging. Yes. But, and what would you say to the Gen Z that's maybe struggling right now, like finding a good fit for them, especially if they're approaching any sort of mental health or bipolar, maybe something you were feeling in your early 20s before your diagnosis and got support. Like, what would you share with them? And again, I guess it doesn't have to be Gen Z, but I'm just thinking like the younger, probably the harder, but they're trying to make their way in this world and they don't kind of understand what's happening, or there's not people or processes in place to support them. What would you share with them?
I would say try to find community or at least one or two people, or maybe online, because a lot of people aren't willing to talk about these things, I don't know, in real time with people face to face. Because, like I said, it took me a long time to share my story. Like, I just shared my story about 2 years ago. But before that, I did look online for community and, with my mental health professionals. So I would just say don't try to handle it alone. You can go on Reddit boards, Twitter, Threads, like all of these places, Instagram, to find camaraderie with people who also go through these things. So I just say don't try to do it alone. Find community.
And real people, not ChatGPT, right?
Yeah, not ChatGPT, real humans who actually suffer with bipolar, or they might know someone with bipolar, or just any advocate, or it could be, someone you know. As long as you trust them, just don't do it alone. It's not fun. I'm here to tell you.
Thank you for being brave and sharing your story. Thank you for saying it out loud. Thank you for advocating. We need more people like you to say, here's what it looked like for me. And so, to your point, people see themselves in you and they find their own way to support. Where can we support you? Where can we follow your story?
You can follow me on LinkedIn. And also on my website, briannagrayson.com.
Great. Any closing remarks as we wrap up?
Yeah, just educate yourself, because like I said, you may not have bipolar, but I guarantee you someone that you know or have been involved with or come in contact with, they have it probably. And don't just brush it off as, something that a lot of people don't deal with. No, educate yourself about it just so that you're aware and you can have some empathy. Especially if you are, a manager or at work, that's really important in your personal relationships. So I just say, if you have bipolar, you're doing great. It will be tough sometimes, but you can definitely get through it. And then if you know someone with bipolar, just be a little patient sometimes. And I mean, but don't blow up yourself on behalf of somebody who has bipolar, because you still have to take care of yourself too, but also just have some kind of understanding and education about it.
Thank you, Brianna.
Thank you.